Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there. Welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike. That's Doug. Dude, you're just sitting there.
I feel like I'm at a funeral of sorts, dude.
Oh, yeah?
Today is the day that we say goodbye to DB22.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't know that last week. I felt like I've already digested it since it happened, what, right after the podcast last week, huh?
It's over, dude.
It's over, dude.
It's over. He's gone. He's gone, dude. We're looking at the Dan Boyle shrine in the Dudes on Hockey studio.
Yep.
And that's not a joke.
We have a picture of Dan Boyle and a Dudes on Hockey t-shirt.
We have three pictures of Dan Boyle.
Yeah, we do.
And the Dudes on Hockey Vegas Cup.
Yep.
And, dude, it's sad. I think we have to start with this because, you know, there's a ton of stuff to talk about. This week, Doug Wilson has gone public.
Yeah.
He's gone public. We actually just finished watching Doug Wilson and Todd McClellan on Yahoo Sports Live. Half-hour conversation with Kevin Kurz and Jim Cosmore. So we'll talk about that. Doug Wilson went on KNBR. Doug Wilson's press conference or conference call with the media. All that stuff. Mark Purdy's article.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good stuff to get into, and then some Sharks business things. But obviously, the most important thing to us,
yeah, it is,
is that our favorite Shark, Dan Boyle, the best defenseman
the Sharks have ever had,
the Sharks franchise, is gone. Will not be offered a contract. And I tried to listen to his conference call. And I just really only got about 3 minutes into it. I couldn't listen to it.
I didn't even try.
It bummed me out because you could hear in his voice that he was deeply disappointed that he wasn't coming back. And it sucks, like, that he wanted to stay and the Sharks didn't want him back. And that I understand it, but it doesn't mean I like it.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly how I feel. Clearly, you know, given the press that Doug Wilson has done, and we'll talk about it in more detail, it's clear he's interested in getting younger faster. You know, Dan Boyle, by most reports, wanted a multi-year deal. The Sharks were never interested in it. I think he said they didn't even talk what a salary might or might not be. And I think after that terrible taste, you know, that terrible result this year, the Sharks are, maybe slightly more doing a little bit more than what we said in the first podcast after they lost, which is sell everything that's not nailed down. I think I was the one that said that. They're not quite going that far, but Dan Boyle certainly was at a point in his career where it was going to be a 35 and over contract, and it was going to... You know, he's a veteran player that would make big dollars. And the Sharks said, that's just not what we want anymore, you know? And especially since Doug Wilson has said several times, we got to go back to go forward and this kind of stuff. It seems pretty obvious, to me anyway, that the defense will take a step back next year, right?
Well, yes. I mean, there's been, you know, several... changes already mentioned. I mean, we'll get into the second big news in that conference call is that they're moving Brent Burns back to defense, which everybody was shocked.
Yes.
I don't think anybody saw that coming. And I don't know how to feel about it because I've never been 100% behind the move in the first place because I was so irritated that we traded for this player and then after an injury, they moved him forward. And then this season, they kept him up there and were adamant that he's a forward and not a defenseman. And now magically he's a defenseman again.
Right.
I don't know if they if they just plain old screwed up,
yeah,
and they are moving him back, or if they're making this move just out of pure need. What's your read on this?
That's a tough one. Because it seemed like they were so certain. It's like, we have an obligation to tell him what position he'll be playing next year and where he's going to be a forward. And now it's like, maybe not. Okay, defenseman again.
Because that was the whole reason. I remember watching the draft when he was acquired, and we were jumping for joy,
yes,
that we got this player.
That's right.
This big, fast, mobile, booming shot. You know, Rob Blake with wheels.
Right.
And we were so excited about it. We've been needing, you know, we wanted someone to ride shotgun with Dan Boyle. And in that first season, it never really quite worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, they seemed to almost clip Burns' wings a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And now, based on everything we're hearing this week, they're going to encourage Burns to, he referred to him as a wild stallion tonight.
Yeah. I hope that's a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure reference.
It sounds like some sort of graphic adult novel.
Wild stallions.
Brent Burns, you wild stallion. Strap on your skates and go nutty.
Oh, man. Someone needs to put Brent Burns on the cover of a Harlequin romance novel. That's hilarious.
Definitely the role is going to be there, and someone's going to have to step up, because Lord knows I don't have confidence that Jason Demers can do that.
Right.
And he had a much improved year this year, but
yes,
we've certainly seen this from him before, where he's been very solid and promising and then gone completely
in reverse. Tank. Yeah.
So throwing Brent Burns on the blue line is a bit of a reversal in strategy, but I can get behind it, you know, because that was the whole reason why he was brought here.
Yeah.
Right.
And here's the thing. And here's one of the reasons why I wasn't super happy when they moved him up, and I never 100% bought into him being a forward. And it's because a defenseman has, especially a puck moving offensive defenseman, flat out has more impact on the game than a winger, right? And we heard Doug Wilson say this tonight. It's like the most important players of the team are the defensemen and the centers. And if Brent Burns is going to play top four defensive minutes, he's going to play more minutes than he did as a forward, almost for certain. He's going to play in all of these special teams situations. Mm-hmm. You know, we see Dan Boyle play almost the entire power play in the playoffs. That could be Brent Burns. And I think you can just flat out have a larger impact on the game. And when you give up as much as the Sharks did to get him, and then you put him in a role that's not as important, you know, I feel like we got sold a little short. So in a lot of ways, I really support moving him back again, because I want to see him have as much effect on the game as I thought we were being advertised.
This was the whole point when he was acquired, was to replace Dan Boyle when this time came, and now the time has come. So I guess I'm concerned that he's been playing out of position for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think I like the idea that he's moving back to D. That's where I've wanted him to play in the whole time anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm worried that he's going to be
back
so green,
yeah,
again, that I'm not sure what to expect.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, is there like another breaking in period that we have to withstand?
Yeah, and this may be part of the step backwards to step forward, which Doug Wilson seems to be, you have it tattooed on his on his face. I mean, he keeps saying that over and over again, dude. I know we've got a ton of emails, some tweets, dude.
Lots of great comments on the blog.
All right.
Let's go to Ted, who sent an email to questions@dudesonhockey.com. Here's a question. Given the meltdown, Boyle and Havlat were probably a foregone conclusions. Would not Boyle and Havlat both have been gone even if the team had made a deep run? That's an interesting question. I mean, it's woulda, shoulda, coulda, but what do you think, dude?
Yes. I think the answer is yes.
They both would have been gone even if
the
Sharks
were
far.
I think that
Havlat
we
for
can
certain.
See we can see in evidence based on how Doug Wilson dealt with his three all-star Olympian unrestricted free agents. He signed two of them and he did not sign one of them. And we were talking about this downstairs, and this is maybe jumping a little bit out of Ted's question, but I mean, if he's talking about a youth movement and a rebuild and saying that there are two thirds of the way through it and they have another third to go that was going to happen anyways, and they were trying to rebuild while winning, then why did you sign Marleau and Thornton mid-season?
Yeah.
When there are serious questions about whether they're going to be useful during a rebuild.
Right.
Of course they're useful, but they're not going to get this team.
They're useful as players, but are they going to help the team move towards the kind of team that Doug and Todd want to go?
And my speculation is that Wilson, much like he did with Setoguchi's contract, views it as an asset, and he has control of these players instead of just letting them walk away for nothing on, you know, in July.
Mm-hmm.
So now he can get something in return for them if it didn't work out. He must have felt that he couldn't have done the same with Dan Boyle.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And there probably were, and there were serious health questions, I think, probably about Dan Boyle too.
That's true.
You know, making sure he was going to hold up through the rest of the season, which he did. But not giving him an extension in the middle of the year after coming off a major head injury, I get that.
Right.
You know?
I don't like it, but I get it.
No, but I get it. So, Ted, I think that Boyle was probably gone no matter what happened.
Yeah.
Because they seemed determined. I mean, how many times have we heard the name Mirko Mueller this week? I mean, he's playing next year. He's going to be on the team.
Pretty much.
Unless he is terrible.
Unless he pulls a Donald Sterling or something.
He's going to be on the team. I mean, they've basically given him a roster spot.
Yeah.
And if he is as good as the two guys they gave roster spots this year in Nieto and Hurdle, then okay.
Yeah.
Because
I'm in.
That panned out pretty well.
It certainly did.
So while Boyle's departure hurts, it hurts a lot. I think it was going to happen no matter what, apparently.
All right, so Ted also asks, with the Burns decision to move him back to D, does that make you worry that either the Sharks aren't going to sign a big-name defenseman or that they perhaps fear they will not be able to lure a big free agent here?
Yes and yes, right?
Yes, yes, of course.
They're not going to sign a big-name defenseman. I don't think there's anybody to bring in, and it doesn't match what Doug Wilson has been saying this week, which is that this team is going to go younger. And this team is not going to bring in a high-priced veteran player that is going to challenge this dressing room, which they're handing the reins over to Couture, Vlasic, Pavelski, Wingles.
Right.
He keeps repeating the same names. I mean, he's basically named the core of the team. He's said it, dude.
Good lord, you got a lot of notes.
Couture, Vlasic, Pavelski, Wingles, Braun, Hurdle, and Nieto. Those are the guys that he mentioned in terms of young leadership. So if you want to identify the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys who maybe are safe on this roster,
those are them.
I think those are the seven guys, you know? And I think there are other guys that you can assume are safe as well, like a Rafi Torres. But, yeah, I mean, he's got no trade value because of his knee anyways. And he's not the problem. I mean,
Clearly not.
He's not the problem. But the other veterans?
Yeah.
So hearing that, dude.
Wait, let's talk real quickly about what Doug Wilson said in the interview tonight regarding the free agents. And that was something that Kevin Kurz basically asked him point blank. He's like, listen, you think you might, you know, the fact that you got so much cap space with Boyle and Havlat, does that mean you think you can make a better push, you know, for a big free agent? Because the Sharks have traditionally not gone for big free agents. And Doug Wilson said, yeah, you're right. We haven't gone for big free agents. Well, and then he gave the sort of standard line he always gives, which is, actually, I would say we have gone for big free agents because we made lots of re-signings. which is sort of half true. I mean, the fact is those guys are kind of a captive audience because they're under contract. I mean, it's a little bit different making a case to a guy that can't talk to anybody else.
That's a totally different thing.
Versus making a case to a guy that's simultaneously talking
to
10 other
teams.
Totally different. Anyway, so that aside, he basically said, right now, I don't think it's going to happen, which, you know, Kurz has reported and others have reported that the Sharks were very much involved in trying to get Ryan Callahan. And that pretty, I mean, if you read between the lines, you know, some people said, well, Callahan's an unrestricted free agent and he went to Tampa. Of course, he made all the right sounds about, oh, yeah, I'd love to stay here because I love it here in Tampa, which every player will say when he gets traded because he doesn't want to seem like a douche. But, you know, one speculation was, hey, okay, well, he didn't get him at the trade deadline. Maybe he'll get him in July. And if I look at what Doug Wilson said in the interview tonight, that doesn't sound very likely.
Yeah, it doesn't. And it goes back to the leadership comments, is that the Ryan Callahan is a captain of one of the most high-profile teams in the entire league.
Right.
In the New York Rangers. If you're going to sign him, any team that signs him, you're getting a natural leader. And he sort of went out of his way tonight to say, you know, he expects the guys who are here right now to take control of the situation. If you bring in Ryan Callahan, you're bringing in a new captain.
Right.
And it sure doesn't sound like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that's what they want.
And I don't see the Sharks getting involved in a situation like that where, I mean, the whole reason why Callahan got traded is that he wasn't willing to accept less than $6 million. And
yeah,
the Sharks aren't going to do that. They've never done that. They're not going to go out and give him, you know, 6 years and $42 million.
Right. That's just not where
and
the
make
Sharks
him
are at.
Bring him in and instantly he becomes the highest paid player on the team. That's not going to happen.
Okay, so we got Eric asking, he says, did the departure of DB22 increase the need for added defensemen, or will Demers be able to step up and fill the vast void Boyle leaves behind? What are your feelings towards Brent Burns being moved back? Does the organization expect Larry Robinson to perform a miracle defensive transformation of Burns? So, yeah, I mean, is it going to be Demers and Burns here? I mean, that's what we're looking at.
Well, we've got Vlasic, Braun, Demers, Burns. I mean, I don't know if you're counting Matt Irwin as a regular player. I mean, maybe. And then Mirko Mueller, who, if he's going to be here, he's going to play. He's mm-hmm. not going to be a scratch. I mean, he'd be pointless. We've heard reports that Taylor Doherty is much improved. I mean, maybe we're going to see Taylor Doherty get an opportunity to compete for a spot. I mean, the guy is, we stood next to him at the prospects camp. He's as big as a house. Yeah. I mean, he's huge. And if he has figured out how to play like a man.
Yeah.
I mean, that he could be a real problem
for a lot of players.
For a lot of players. If he has figured out how to play, but you've got to imagine that in whatever is going to transpire in the next couple of months, that there's going to be, and we didn't mention Brad Stewart, which
he's under contract.
He is under contract, but I would say there's a high probability that he might be on that list of players that won't be around.
Sure. But they'd have to find somebody to take him.
I think so. I think that you might have a higher odds of someone taking him during the season where you're not responsible for the whole thing. But remember, the whole deal when he came back here was that he basically wanted to play in his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he left the Red Wings. So, I mean, he may just say, screw you, I'm not leaving.
Right.
But we don't know. I mean, we don't know what's going on, but that's the situation. So do we have enough players right now to fill the blue line? Yes, but would they probably be looking for another young player to come in? That might be part of what they're searching for.
Or looking for in terms of the draft.
Yeah, maybe. Because
they have some picks.
Yeah, and that's been another line that he's said many times. They have 3 picks in the top 60. And 7 picks. So,
right.
And he also said in the conference call, we may even add more. So,
right.
That's out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's out there. And
well, dude, let's have some fun. Eric's got a crazy trade.
I'm going after rails on a crazy trade.
All right. So, Eric says, crazy trade Pavelski to Toronto in return for Phaneuf, Kadri, Gardner combos. The reports seem like they have soured on all three of these guys, dude. We talked a little bit about Phaneuf last week. Any interest in Nazem Kadri or Jake Gardner, dude?
No, not in Kadri, because the guy sounds like a douchebag.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've right. what I've heard about him, he seems like a tool. He's extremely talented, but not exactly who you want to like come in and like build your team around.
Right. When you hear these guys talk about how the team is mentally weak, the first player you don't usually think of is, we should go get Nazem Kadri.
Now,
I would not say that.
Jake Gardner, I have never really quite understood what the problem was. I mean, I haven't watched Toronto play a lot, but I mean, he seemed to have pretty good numbers this year.
Yeah.
He seems like a pretty
useful
silky
player.
Skating. Yes, I'd be interested in Jake Gardner. And if Toronto was just going to give up on him,
mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't move Joe Pavelski for him. I don't want to trade Joe Pavelski, period, unless you're getting back something of extreme value, like
right
when we're talking
like serious
value in return. You can't trade Joe Pavelski for Jake Gardner, a first, and some AHL player,
right?
Like that would be ludicrous.
Yeah I agree with you. So yeah, I don't think Joe Pavelski is going to be on the move. I know he might very well be the one player that the Sharks could get the most value for and have the most freedom in moving, but it would be extremely shocking to see Pavelski leave, because he plays down the middle and he plays so many different roles. He can play the power play and the penalty kill, and he's great defensively. He takes faceoffs, the whole thing. You can't just replace a guy like that. And I guess maybe this should move on to the next topic, is that if we read between the lines and maybe we're slanted looking at the conversations that we witnessed tonight, it certainly seems like Joe Thornton is not going to be around. I mean,
there was no vote of confidence given
none.
To him being on the team.
There was none. I mean,
tonight,
he said basically that they're good players. That's sort of the beginning and end of the compliments
yeah.
towards Joe Thornton, is that he's still a good player. And it's like, okay. Yeah, I'll give you that, I guess. But he said we're going to make some serious changes in the leadership roles. I mean, he basically said we're going to trade Joe, or we're going to strip him of the captaincy and give it to somebody else. I mean, that's sort of how I interpreted this. Obviously, he didn't say either of those things, but he seemed so vehement in stating that we are turning this team over to the young guys, God damn it, and this is what's going to happen.
And I'm encouraged by that,
right?
Because it's a... Enough is enough. Like, is this a team-wide failure? Yes. But you have to take a look at the guy who's the point guard of this team.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you believe in the captaincy having influence over the culture of this locker room or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were a little split on that.
Right.
But Joe Thornton has the puck on his stick more than anybody else when they're playing 60 minutes.
Right.
And part of the problem is that he won't shoot. The power play, when it's bad, a lot of it has to do with him
right.
standing still.
Standing still, looking for a guy to thread the pass to.
So these are the same damn problems we've right. been talking about for years. And it doesn't mean he's not a good player. He is maybe a Hall of Fame player, right?
Oh, yeah.
So... The guy is he's a great player, but it's not working anymore. Like
right.
it doesn't work here anymore, and I just can't imagine a scenario where he is still here. I don't think he can be here anymore.
I can imagine plenty of scenarios where he's still here, because either he won't consent to being moved or something like that.
I don't think that Wilson would be coming out and saying this stuff unless it hasn't already been, it's been worked out.
Yeah, not specifically worked out, but...
But it's been... They talked about
they
it.
They have an idea
yeah, he
of what
said,
could
listen,
happen.
Joe, I think it's time to move on. And I have to assume that it's been worked out. I don't think... That might have been why there was several days of silence.
Yeah.
Until that could be ironed out. He also went out of his way tonight to say, every conversation I have with my players is in confidence and... In respect to them, I won't discuss trades. You know, we know that's how he always handles his business. So he's not going to come out and say Joe Thornton's not on the team, but he never mentioned Joe Thornton once tonight.
No.
When talking about the team moving forward. He's gone, dude. He's going to be gone. And I think it's going to happen at the draft. That's what I think is going to happen. I think he's going to be gone in and around the draft.
And they might be looking for... Is this considered to be a deep draft?
No.
Not particularly.
What?
I mean, obviously, who's the number one? Connor McDavid, right?
Yeah, that
guy's going to be great. But, you know, the top five players are always pretty great. Almost
every year.
Well,
I think, isn't Connor McDavid not even this year? I think
he might be next year.
I think he's next year.
I
don't think they'd get a top 10 pick for him. You know what I mean? But
I don't even know if you'd want one this year. That was sort of where I was going.
I think they want a young player who they know
that they've scouted
can play,
right?
And is on a reasonable deal and has a long future in this league. And, you know, when I think about maybe where he could go, and I've been thinking about it a lot, dude. All right.
Okay.
The one team I keep coming back to,
I hope. Okay.
Is the Flyers.
Really? Okay.
I keep coming back to the Flyers, and this is why. One, they're crazy, and they do crazy stuff all the time.
That's true.
And they're not afraid of high price contracts, and they're not afraid to make big splashes. They have a ton of young players that play in the description of what Doug Wilson's talking about. Hard and fast. And mentally tough, right?
Right.
I see you're looking at the player profile of a certain Matt Reed.
Of course.
Okay?
Who wouldn't?
I'm talking about Matt Reed. I'm talking about Braden Schenn. I'm talking about Sean Couturier. I'm talking about one of those guys.
Right.
In return. Now, I don't think you're not going to get two.
No, you're not going to get two of those guys.
You would get one, and you may have to take some garbage as salary filler, and maybe you get there first. Would that be acceptable? If you got Couturier, you had to take back some sort of garbage and their first. Is that an acceptable hypothetical return for Joe Thornton? And when I say garbage, I'm talking about taking back the contract of Nicholas Grossman. Okay?
Yeah, right. That's not a good contract.
No.
Not particularly. You know, I am not particularly objective when it comes to Sean Couturier. I thought the Flyers got him as a steal number 8. He was projected to go number 1 that year for a significant part of that season. Ended up going number 8 to the Flyers. The Flyers are not really playing him in a top offensive role. They're playing him more as a third line center. I would love to have Sean Couturier. I would take that deal in a friggin' heartbeat.
I'm purely speculating, dude.
Yeah.
But when I think about a team that has an asset lineup with sort of what I think the Sharks are looking for,
mm-hmm.
I think of the Flyers, and I think of a team that if you're Joe, you know, they have a good core. They're not a bad team. And yep. That's a fun hockey city. Maybe he'd be interested, dude. I don't know. This is wild, rampant speculation.
Oh, yeah. Sure, sure. Okay, dude. What else do we have here? I'm just looking at the Twitter, see what people have said. I don't... You know, it seems a lot of people have the same kinds of questions. that we've already addressed. Dude, you got pages of notes here. What exactly are you writing?
Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about this stuff already. I mean, I listened to Doug Wilson's conference call probably 3 times. You know, because he's a master of kind of talking around.
He's the Alan Greenspan of the NHL, if people know what that means.
And, yeah. But you can get information out of what he says. You know, dude, he said something really weird tonight, and we both caught it, about how lucky we are to have Hasso Plattner as an owner, because the team stayed in the Bay Area. I was dying for Kurz to follow up on that.
I know. It's didn't. Like, wait, what?
I don't know what that means, but... maybe we'll.
I think we're going to try to have Kurz on the show. Yeah, can we write another note in this 10-page document?
We'll have to try and follow up with that and see what
did he catch. I want to know if Kurz.
And it might have just been a slip. I mean, it might have just been a slip of nothing. You know, that we're just lucky to have him here and being the owner of the team. Maybe it means nothing, because there's been no
I know
hint of the Sharks attempting to move to another city, and why would they? I mean it's extremely solid, but right. But I found that to be bizarre.
Yeah.
But anyways, we have not talked about Marty Havlat, you know, being bought out yet, and which I think is sort of a foregone conclusion,
old right? news at this point. Well, they didn't say bought out, but they said he won't be back. Let's put it that.
No one
will take him.
No one's gonna take him, dude.
Yeah.
You know, let's go over the injuries here.
All right.
Demers had a foot fracture.
Okay.
Burns, torn ligament in his thumb.
Okay.
Tomas Hertl, obviously his knee was not healthy.
Right.
Marlowe, ligament tear in his wrist and an oblique tear.
Jeez.
Pavelski, torn labrum, and he had surgery.
Wow.
Torres had another knee procedure after the season.
Wow. Right?
He called it a cleanup. And he was getting injections to play. Vlasic, still extremely vague
right.
on and calling it an upper body injury.
That's a concussion.
But I don't know why they didn't just say it.
Because no one says that. They don't have to.
And a knee injury. So those are the injury updates, dude. Other news, Harry Sateri leaving the team
right.
and signing with the KHL. Why do you think that happened?
I it sounds like it was a sort of a 50-50 split with Troy Grozenik in Worcester, and maybe he wanted to. Well, there's I could see at least 2 reasons why, maybe 3. One, he'll make more money in the KHL, and let's be honest, these guys are in a precarious career position playing in the minor leagues, and it's hard to fault a player who there's certainly no guarantee he's going to play in the NHL and have a long career where he's going to make millions of dollars. And if he has the opportunity to, say, make $1 million or $2 million overseas, and frankly, he'll be closer to home if he does play overseas, it's hard to fault a player for doing that. You know, get a little bank going, you know, a little retirement fund here, because it's not like he's breaking the bank in the NHL. He's probably making $100,000 in the AHL, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. And he'll make at least 5 or 10 times that in the KHL. Might give him some more visibility to other, you know, obviously he'll probably hopefully play more in the KHL. That's obviously a benefit. And it may actually give him a more direct path to the NHL. If you are playing against good competition, and I would consider the KHL to be better competition than the AHL, probably pretty close, but the KHL is almost certainly better. And if you can be successful at that level, then it's an easier call to say, okay, let's put this guy in the top league.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's not going to impact anything that the Sharks are doing moving forward. It is interesting that they're discussing going with the youth movement, and then they're perfectly fine with their third, you know, or second goalie mm-hmm. going overseas. Yeah.
Right.
So,
but they still have his rights. It's
they
not
do
like
have
he's
his
gone.
Rights, but if they were going to be, this leads into another point. If they were going to be trading Niemi, I don't know if they would have allowed this to happen.
That's true.
Now, he's restricted. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as far as I know, I think he was restricted. So he chose to go. He didn't have to sign a contract with the Sharks. Maybe they wanted him to stay. But It certainly sounded like tonight, although they hedged their statements a couple times by saying, we'll see what happens this summer. But it sounded like Niemi and Stalock are both going to be back, but the playing time might be a little bit more evenly distributed.
Right, right. And the one comment I think made during the interviews that I thought was the most dubious was they said, oh, do you think it's going to be an open competition between Niemi and Stalock? And I can't remember who it was that said, oh, well, it's always been an open competition.
Yeah, okay.
Which is
right.
Which is funny. That is fairly laughable.
I do think one question that has not been answered, and I don't think we'll ever get an answer, but I hope that Doug Wilson and Tom McClellan think they know the answer, is, and they must ask them point blank, why did the message get lost from the coaching staff to the team? Because mm-hmm. they've said several times that they told the players,
what was up?
Don't get mesmerized by the first two games. The Kings are way too good for you to think that you're going to beat them 7-2 every
right.
night.
Right.
That's not going to happen. This isn't going to go down like this. And in translation, it was lost. And we've heard Drew Remenda talk about how they discussed on the power play, shoot, shoot, shoot.
And it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. You know, trying to get the players ready mentally for games 5 and 6, which were both dreadfully awful performances mm-hmm. by this team. So how do they fix that? Like, how does that get addressed? How do they know that McClellan isn't lost on this roster?
Well,
do you just purge the people who you think he is lost on?
I think that's what it is, right? I think part of that might be, well, if we bring in a new leadership group, the leadership group will be leaders because they actually take direction from the coaches, as opposed, I mean, I'm not, obviously I am totally speculating here, but if you follow certain leaders and the leaders are veteran players who feel like they understand what needs to happen, you know, and maybe that agrees with what the coaching staff says, and maybe it doesn't. If you get those guys out and say, okay, now we're going to turn it over to guys that, okay, you guys, we actually want you to take our direction now. I mean, that could be one way of getting the message through, which is, okay, we think that there's not an out-and-out mutiny here. I'm not saying that, but let's say maybe some directives from the coaching staff were seen as more suggestions. And they said, well, if we put Couture and Pavelski and Vlasic in there, and we're going to expect them to
reinforce the message,
reinforce the message passed down by the coaching staff, which maybe hasn't happened to their satisfaction. I mean, we've heard Drew Remenda and others say they've told Joe to shoot a bunch of times. It's pretty clear he's not super into taking all their directions, right?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think the last thing from my copious notes,
I know,
is, you know, Doug Wilson said you have to be really careful that you're not just avoiding what really needs to take place.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a bit of a window into where he is right now, where, yeah, I think he has been avoiding what needs to take place,
yeah.
Which is that, and we've been saying this for a couple of years, beyond the Sharks' surface success, which is regular season. And yes, they've had more playoff, played more playoff games than anybody or something in the last 10 years or some goofy stat like that, right?
Right, right.
But it doesn't translate to the whole point, which is to win the Stanley Cup or even play for the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point you've got to make changes that matter instead of changes around the periphery.
Yeah. I think you're right. And the other thing you said that I do agree with, and I'm kind of glad he said it, because in some ways this makes me think of the Penguins. And he says, you know, you don't want to just make a change and then you can say, everybody, look, I made a big change.
Right.
And you know, for instance, trading Pavelski would be something like that. Hey, I traded Pavelski. Look how willing I am to make a big change.
Right.
And the fact is, the team could get really, really hurt by that, you know, for a long time.
That doesn't fix it. It doesn't fix anything.
Right.
I mean, if you make that move and you keep Thornton and Marlowe, you've made it considerably worse. I mean, unless there's something going on behind the scenes that we don't understand, nothing has led me to believe that Pavelski is going anywhere. He keeps repeating his name in with Couture and Vlasic, which you would assume are the three cornerstones of this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be.
Absolutely.
And you add to that and you build from that, and you've got to move on from the beloved ones. It's time.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he might actually do it. I mean,
and here's the thing that, you know, I do respect him for that. I'm looking over some of the comment threads here, and there's some people that says, you know, DW's a joke and this kind of thing. And people are certainly entitled to that position. And I think, you know, there's a better case to be made for that particular position this year than ever. But the fact that Doug Wilson has basically come out and said all these things and said, oh, there's going to be more changes made. He really kind of put his neck out there, you know, because clearly he put a stake in the ground and says, this is where we're going to go. I mean, not in specific terms, as in this player is going to be gone and this player is going to be here, but he said, we're going to make big changes. There are more changes to happen. And there's no doubt that if we roll in to opening night with Marlowe and Thornton and Pavelski and all these guys, and the biggest change is that Boyle's gone, Havlat's gone, and Burns is now playing defense, Doug Wilson hoisted himself by his own petard at that point, because he said there's going to be more changes and there haven't been. So he could have really sort of played this a little bit safer if he was really worried about saving his own behind on this deal. So in a way, I kind of do respect him for that, because he basically said, you have to, I'm going to say we're going to make a big change. Therefore, now you have a measuring stick by which to look at my performance over the next few months. And he gave himself a little bit of a breathing room by saying, okay, it may not happen by the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, I think it's pretty fair to say that, you know, if the Sharks have another down year, or really if they don't make a major change next season, then he's going to be gone, right? He's basically given himself a year to try.
In a way, but I think he's hedged himself a little bit, dude, by saying that you're going to take a step backwards, take a step forwards. And he may have pitched this as, if I trade Thornton, let's say he trades Thornton this summer. And let's say he holds Marlowe and trades him at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the Sharks miss the playoffs.
Right.
And they accumulate younger players and assets. And then he has pitched this to Plotner and ownership in that, listen, you got to give me some time to rebuild this.
Of course.
I think that he's bought himself more than a year. Now,
if he
does nothing,
right,
then he's toast.
That's what I mean.
But he's not going to do nothing.
I hope not.
No,
I think, like I said, he's basically put himself in that position where he now has to do.
We have a bet on the line.
Has
here.
To do something.
You're nervous about our bet about Joe Thornton again? And Marla said one of them will be traded. It's a night of drinking.
It's
on
looking.
The line.
It's looking good for you. It's looking
it
good
is.
For you, because I thought that was kind of a long shot at the time. And that was before he came out with this. So
I just cannot see any scenario that it doesn't happen, dude. And based on what he's saying, I think he knows. I think he's got some, he is down the road with some things, and he knows that he's got people who want Thornton, and he knows that there are a few places that he will go, and he's right. Ironing it out, because he's in a vulnerable position, right? I mean, he's in the position that the Sharks usually take advantage of.
Right.
And he's, you're not going to get, you know, people are saying, you know, well, trade
let me give you my,
Joe
all my best
for
players.
Malkin or
yeah.
something. And it's like,
yeah.
That's hilarious. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, that's, they're not even close to being of the same value.
No.
And I mean, you're going to have to take, and it sounds like he wants that younger player
mm-hmm.
plus
whatever
prospects in return.
All right, dude. Enough navel gazing about the Sharks. There's two series still going on. Have you watched any of them?
I have.
Nice.
Yeah. I admit I've come back a little bit.
You've come back,
I've come back a little bit.
From the edge.
I watched two thirds of today's game. Mm-hmm. While I was mostly pretending to be Elmo in my living room. The weird part is that I was alone.
Yeah. That is a little weirder than normal.
Yes. So while I was having a conversation with my daughter as Elmo, and she was telling me that she lives in the aquarium.
Oh, neat.
Which I really enjoyed that. she's funny. Every animal, she has all these little plastic animals. They all live in the aquarium.
Every one of them.
Dinosaurs, cows. I say, what's your name? Cow, where do you live? Aquarium. Always. I love it. With the turtles.
Likes
anyways,
the turtles.
So I did watch that game. There's going to be some interesting discipline that maybe comes out of this game today. It's pretty chippy in that first period. Carcillo, Prust. I mean, there's going to be some things that some suspensions that maybe come out of this. Montreal, I thought they were done. No Carey Price.
They showed
a lot of heart. I mean, if you're talking about exactly what the Sharks don't have,
right,
is what Montreal demonstrated tonight without their best player. And they go in with a minor league goalie to the Garden and win.
And win in overtime.
In overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the makeup of a team that the Sharks are envious of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that collection of guys, they got through a real rough patch tonight. And you've got New York kind of looking in the mirror a little bit going, uh-oh. You watching any games, dude?
No. I'm worried about New York because they're my last team in the, and I am having trouble watching the Western Conference Finals just because I have intense dislike for both teams. So
yeah,
it's hard to enjoy a game when every player you see you dislike.
How could the Kings possibly get to the Stanley Cup Finals playing in three series that are gonna go seven?
Exactly.
Like how. How can
know.
They do it?
If there's a team that can do it, though, it's them.
They're incredible. I mean, really, it's...
It should have been over. The Ducks
should have been over.
The Ducks
should have
been
over yesterday, dude. I mean, they were down yesterday.
They were down 2-0.
They scored like six.
Yeah, six unanswered.
It pisses me off royally when you think about how close the Sharks were to being in this spot that they could have been playing in the Western Conference Finals.
I still think there's not enough gas in the tank. I think Chicago's too skilled. I still think that it's bad for my Vegas bet, but I can't see how Chicago could lose that series. Chicago's going to win. They're going to win. So
we'll see, dude. Yeah. We'll see. The Vegas bet is on the line, dude. This is a long podcast.
It is.
There's a lot of stuff happened this week. Before we go, dude, your thoughts on Larry Robinson's expanded role in player development and being behind the bench less.
Okay. I'm not really even sure what that means.
Well, I think...
Behind the bench less, what does that mean? Every other period?
No, it means that...
Not at all?
It means that some games he's not going to be there.
Okay.
It sounds like... Robinson's going to be spending more time working with younger players and being in San Jose during the season less.
He's not going to be in San Jose as much during the season.
No.
Oh.
I mean, that was my interpretation of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is that he's going to be working with the players in Worcester and also sounds like spending time away from the game a little bit.
Yeah.
And not always on the bench. It sounds like he might be watching games from the press box as a coach in that respect. It seems like a phasing to the front office to me.
Yeah, it could be. And I know that there was some speculation that he may not even be with the team next year because, you know, he's talked about wanting to spend time with his family. And one of the reasons why he came to the Sharks is all is because I think he has family in Southern California.
So the Sharks need a new assistant coach, don't you think?
Yeah.
And that's probably coming. Is if Robinson is still going to act as a assistant coach, but not really on the bench, and he'll work with players, but he's not going to be around all the time. I mean, there are options internally. You could move Ricci down to the bench, but yeah, it doesn't seem like that's where the Ricci has no formal coaching experience, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's more customary to have two bench coaches anyway, other than the head coach. I mean, three was a little weird anyway.
I know. Jay Woodcroft seems seems like a cool dude. He was really cool to me the day that we came, my wife was singing the national anthem. We were there super early, and he like talked to us, came up and talked to us. He was super nice. I don't totally buy into his usefulness as a coach based on, it seems like the areas that he's responsible for are the ones that suck.
They're the worst at, yeah.
Right?
It does seem that way.
So I'm not going to feel great if Jim Johnson and Jay Woodcroft are the two guys on the bench with Todd. That's not going to make me feel good. I think there's another assistant coming.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. It's possible.
Claude Noel.
There's enough ex-head coaches on as assistant coaches these days.
Torts.
Right. Aren't both of LA's assistant coaches used to be head coaches?
Yes.
Right? Don't they have John Stevens and I can't remember their other one.
Don't, maybe we should be considering that as,
we should get Barry
I mean, Larry Robbins is the ex.
We should get Barry Trotz, although there wouldn't Barry be enough Trotz. Room behind the bench.
Oh,
sorry.
Since we're pushing the hour mark, dude, aren't we?
Yeah, close enough.
Some of the job openings still out there. Washington, rumored to be dallying with Barry Trotz, connected with Wayne Gretzky, Ray Shiro potentially, who was dismissed. And you know what? Actually, I want to ask you about this. Mm. What do you make of the situation in Pittsburgh? Do you think that that's legit, or you think that that's...
Now I have to bleep this. You can give me
Dude. They've kept Ray Shiro and appointed an interim GM.
No, they ditched Ray Shiro.
No, they kept Dan Bylsma.
They kept
Dan
Bylsma, yeah.
So, which some people think that it's gamesmanship against other teams in their division, Capitals, to keep him from going there.
Right.
And that when they get a new GM, they're just going to fire him. He's going to have nowhere to go.
Right. That's possible.
Or they're selling it as, well, this job's more attractive because we've got Dan Bylsma as our coach.
I'd find that less easy to believe. I think maybe they might want to hire a new GM, and then the GM can actually make the call to keep Dan Bylsma. And that's a possibility. I don't know if that's actually possible in the real world, but I can understand if that's their position. They say, listen, we're going to hire a new GM. If you want to keep Dan Bylsma, fine. You're the new GM. You can do whatever you want. Or if you want to bring in your own guy, then can him and get somebody else new. I understand.
That's what's going to happen. He's going to get canned.
I believe you. I think that's true.
You can't keep him.
I don't think so. I don't. But see, I think...
Although I thought, who would think you'd keep Tom McClellan after what happened?
I think what the Pens did is sort of like what... it's sort of a knee-jerk, crazy move. I don't think Ray Shiro has done a terrible job in Pittsburgh, frankly. He had a lot of high picks, and he made every single one of them count, which is what is not what you can say about most teams with really high picks.
Right.
He made every single one of them count. Now, maybe trading Jordan Staal was a bad call. I understand that, but every GM makes mistakes, and
Jordan Staal's been terrible in Carolina.
That's true.
So,
but, I understand if you want to make that move. They ditched him like the day after it was. I mean, they clearly thought about it for like 20 seconds. They're like, I can't believe we lost. You're fired. I mean, that's basically what happened. It was like The Apprentice.
Right. Yeah.
And frankly, you kind of want a sophisticated organization that's going to make moves deliberately. And while I understand like the passion and the emotion involved in like trying to fire people, I get that. But my position on both of those things is, you fire these guys if you think you can get somebody better. And I don't know if the Penguins think they can get somebody better. They're just like, oh, we don't like this guy anymore. Yeah. You're gone.
That's a great point.
And now they have to go hire some schlub who knows where.
There's one good coaching candidate left out there on the market, and it's Barry Trotz.
Yeah.
And he's not a right fit for all teams. And would he be a right fit in Pittsburgh? I don't think so.
Not even close.
No, that's not the right fit for Pittsburgh, And I can't wait to see Ovechkin playing for Barry Trotz. That's not going to go well either.
I know.
So, you know, you look at Trotz and you wonder where he should end up. Vancouver, that just seems like a terrible fit too. So,
I mean, you're probably going to see some of these retreads, like these assistant coaches that used to be head coaches. They're going to get another crack at it.
Al, maybe everybody will just bring in Ted Nolan.
Everybody.
Ted Nolan, come on down.
He's going to hire. He's going to interview for every job.
Did you see Halak signed with the Islanders today?
No, I did not see that. For how long?
I think it was 4 years, $18
million. Wow.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
That's a pretty good contract, actually, for right. the Islanders. You know, you're getting a
good goalie.
An upper half in the league goalie at a very reasonable price, and really gives them some stability in a position that was a big problem for them. So Gar Snow finally got his man, dude.
He did.
He convinced somebody to stay.
One guy.
I wonder if it helps them, players, knowing that they're moving. I mean, maybe that's going to be a selling point. They're moving to Brooklyn, so...
Yeah, oh yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
That might be a selling point.
Absolutely. They're going to get a lot more visibility and buzz. I mean, obviously the Nets have done a lot better than they used to.
Right, and playing in that terrible hellhole of an arena...
Oh yeah.
This is the worst. It's just such a dump.
Oh yeah.
It's going to make a difference.
I think so. Yeah, maybe he's buying low. Maybe Halak is buying low. And he's expecting a meteoric rise like the New Jersey Nets.
What else, dude? We've got...
Dude, let's just wrap this thing up.
No!
Yeah.
Dude, I want to get to the magic moment.
No. No.
Let's get to the hour, dude.
Dude, we're close enough. We're close enough. We've done this long enough. We're well into our normal pattern where we talk for 20 minutes during the season and an hour in the off season.
This is so much more exciting. Dude... I saw the movie Neighbors.
Dude, I'm turning this off.
No.
Dude, we're done.
Dude, how dare you? Neighbors.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.